please.
Call to order, the meeting to order, the State Veterans Affairs Division come to order. And I'd like to start a tradition here that I don't know if any other committees do this, but I think it's appropriate for the Veterans Committee Division to start the committee each. We only meet on Mondays, so we'd start the committee with the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag, and I've asked the Representative Purcell to lead us.
Yes, sir. Let's see the flag over here on your right. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Take a seat.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Purcell. In fact, I'll be calling on someone different each time we meet, so be expecting that. But again, it's an honor for me to be in this position. And I've served a few years here at the legislature, and what I'd like to do first is introduce our staff that we have, the people that work behind the scenes. They do so much work for all the committees that we have here at the in the House. And I'd like to have each staff maybe just mention a little bit about themselves and a little background, you know, where you're coming from and what your role is. Our committee administrator is Adam Seidel. Adam?
I am the committee administrator for this committee as well as for state government finance. I previously worked with Representatives McDonald, Runbeck, and Druskowski as their legislative assistant during the latter part of the last biennium. And I'm very excited to work in this committee.
Welcome. And our committee legislative assistant, Jeremiah Wingstead, he also is my LA.
Hi, I'm Jeremiah Wingstead. I'm new to the House this biennium, and prior to this, I graduated from the University of Minnesota and worked with the Jeff Johnson campaign.
Welcome. And House Research, nonpartisan, Jeff Diebel.
Mr. Chair, Jeff Diebel with House Research. I've been employed by that department for 12 years, and this is my first year covering veterans. My primary responsibility is to staff the Public Safety Committee. I also serve in the Army Reserve as a major in the JAG Corps.
Okay. Welcome. And House Republican Research, Brian Cook.
Hi, thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Brian Cook. This is my first legislative session. I come via way. I spent the last 2 years at the Minnesota Action Network, and previous to that was working for Congressman Eric Paulson.
And DFL Research, Jim Gilben. You're welcome to join. We've got plenty of seats, too.
So. Mr. Chair, my name's Jim Gilben. I've been around House State Government for the last 30 years, and for the last 2 years, I was committee administrator for Government Operations and Elections Committees.
Well, welcome. And fiscal staff is Helen Roberts here. Helen, you can join the table too. We got plenty of seats.
I'm Helen Roberts. I've worked for the House since 1997, and I staff the State Government Finance Division, which and various versions of the Veterans Division.
Okay, a senior staff person here. Okay, and if we could just go around, I'll just call people in alphabetically. I think Representative Davids is not here yet. He had a bill up already. In another committee. I'll start it off. I'm Representative Bob Detmer, and I've been in the legislature now. This is my fifth term, and I've served on the Veterans Committee and the State Government Finance Committee as the vice chair in the past, and in the higher education as the vice chair. I have also been on K-12 education and the taxes committee. This year I'm chairing this committee. And I'm also serving on the Ways and Means Committee and the K-12 Education Finance and State Government Finance. So as you know, that the state this committee used to be part of the State Government Finance. I just felt it was important to maybe separate it off and get the veterans things organized the way we want it. And it still will be falling under the State Government Finance. My family, we have three children. Many of you know we have twin sons that are West Point graduates. They're still serving in the military. They've had multiple tours in Iraq and Afghanistan. Rob is out in West Point mentoring cadets at West Point. And Travis, when he got back from Afghanistan, the Army sent him to Georgetown University in D.C. to get his master's in public affairs. He's teaching military courses at Fort Meade, Maryland. And his wife's a JAG officer and now in the private sector. And our daughter is married to an Army sergeant who's now came off active duty. And they moved from Phoenix to nice, warm Minnesota. And he's taking courses at Century College to be a nurse. He's in the National Guard now. And we just had a new grandson born the 29th of December. So it gives us seven now and counting. And but it's an honor to serve here. I've served myself, a 25-year veteran in the Army Reserve, retired, and spent enduring freedom and Iraqi freedom during those two wars. So it's an honor to be here and serving with you all. So Representative Hancock.
Hi, my name is Dave Hancock. It's my second term in terms of the legislature. I was here from elected in 2010. I live just northwest of Bemidji, represent an area that runs from Lake of the Woods, northwest angle, down to south of Akeley, Chamberlain. It's long and narrow. This is my first appointment as a vice chair. I'm very honored to do so, and thank you, Bob. I served 2 years in the military, 1969 to 71. Was not in theater. Went to Fort Sill, Oklahoma. I was a operating room technician, was my primary MOS, and a combat medic secondary. Spent 2 years there. I have a great admiration and sometimes even almost a guilt feeling for never having gone to Nam. But I was asked to serve, and I served proudly and did my best. I serve on the Environment Natural Resources Committee and on the Greater Minnesota Economic and Workforce Development Committees, and looking forward to a good year.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Lewick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dale Lewick, represent Aiken and most of rural Crow Wing County up in 10B, just kind of wrapped around Mille Lacs Lake. My wife, Linda, and I have two children. Oldest son, Lance, has actually been retired from the Army Reserves now for a little while. Daughter, still flying as a flight attendant for American Airlines. Myself, I entered the Navy in 1968 when we had obviously full employment then. If you didn't do anything else, you were going to go in the Army, and which was fine. I went in the Navy, spent 28 years there, been retired since 97. My first term, and I'm really looking forward to serving here and serving my fellow veterans. Thank you.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I represent parts of Ramsey and a small part of Washington County, the communities of White Bear, Mapewood, Birchwood, Willardy, Montemedi. This is my second term. First time serving on the Veterans Affairs Committee. I'm looking forward to it. The other committees I serve on is Environmental Natural Resources and also Health and Human Services Reform. Married to my wife, Christy. We've got three kids, all just, well, kind of in college yet. And my regular day job, I work as Director of Finance Operations for Homeless Youth Shelter in North Minneapolis.
Okay, welcome. Representative Newton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I'm Representative Terry Newton. I represent Coon Rapids, Blaine, Spring Lake Park area, the northern suburbs. I'm a 23-year active Army veteran, Vietnam vet, and I had 7 years in the Middle East, mostly based out of Turkey. Enjoy being on this committee. I was vice chair for the first two terms. This is my third term on the committee.
And a sergeant major, correct?
That is
correct. Okay, so one officer, sergeant major. We do have an officer, so we're hitting the rounds here. So, Lesh, Representative Lesh.
Okay.
We got another officer here.
John Lesh, District 66B. This is my seventh term in the legislature. I represent Como Park, the North End, East Side, and Hamlin Midway area of St. Paul. I serve also on the Civil Law Committee and then on taxes. Those are my only other committees besides this one. Outside the legislature, I'm married to my wife Melissa, who you'll see around here because she's a lobbyist for Minneapolis. But please don't give her any extra benefits because she's my wife, because she's from Minneapolis. Okay, so. And my daughter Alice is 14 and she goes to school here in St. Paul, middle school. I'm also a prosecutor for the city of St. Paul. I've done that for 14 years now. I own a small business, and then I'm also an officer in the infantry, Minnesota National Guard, first lieutenant.
And Representative Pugh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Cindy Pugh, and it's just such an honor to serve on this committee. I am married to my husband, Jack, for 34 years this year and have two adult children. Live in Cincinnati and Chicago. I represent Chanhassen, where we've lived for over 25 years in the area, the beautiful area around Lake Minnetonka. I have not served in the military, but have such a great appreciation for those of you and who have, and I'm so grateful for your service. My father was in the Army. My father-in-law was a Marine. And one of my very closest friends, almost like family, is a constituent, 90-year-old World War II veteran, Fremont Russ. And I have learned so much from him, including him having been a part of the 97th Infantry that liberated the Czech Republic. And have heard so many, just so many stories from him, and have such a great appreciation for our veterans, specifically our World War II veterans. I'm also serving on state government finance, and I'll be the vice chair of government operations and elections. Served on government operations last 2 years, and higher education as well.
Welcome. Thank you. Representative Driscoll.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Now we're done with the officers. Are we getting to the gentleman? Is that what's going on? I've been waiting for a while to use that line. Well, thank you for the opportunity to introduce myself. As a representative, Tim O'Driscoll, I'm serving my third term in the Minnesota State Legislature. I'm from the central Minnesota area, where I coordinated 9 area cities to be Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Communities, the first of its kind in the state of Minnesota. We have had Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Counties, but we've not had multiple cities, and we did that about 6 years ago. Continue to actively and be involved in working with the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Communities project in the central Minnesota area, as well as our Central Minnesota Warrior to Citizen program. And when I left our last meeting in December, I had invited those folks to come down some afternoon to be a part of our meeting, to just see what we do down here. And there, we will have guests at some point from my district who support veterans and veterans affairs. More recently, my assignments for this session, I'm on the Veterans Affairs Committee. I'm also on the State Government, Government Operations and Elections Committee. Also on the Capital Investment Committee. Will be serving as your Vice Chair of the Commerce Committee this year, and also will be the Chair of the Pensions Commission here in this year, as the House will have the gavel on that, and also will be your Speaker Pro Tem these next 2 years in the Minnesota House. I'm looking forward to working on this committee, because one thing we know is that things can get partisan, and the thing that I can proudly report is that the men and women who serve on this Veterans Affairs Committee, whether Democrats or Republicans, we tend to find the right things for veterans, and I hope that we can continue to do that as part of our goal and our mission the next 2 years as well. Thank you.
Welcome, Representative O'Driscoll. I think the only one that is missing then is Representative Ward. So, Representative Ward, come on in. Come on in.
That was a
perfect timing. And as she finds her seat, she'll prepare a little introduction of herself. So, welcome.
Good afternoon.
By the way, I won't drop anybody for push-ups for being late either. So.
That's good. I have a bad elbow.
Okay.
Doesn't work. So you're just wanting
introduction yourself, and maybe what what committees you serve on now and a little background. And do you have anybody in your family that have served in the military? Those types of things. Okay.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. I'm really glad to be here, late though I am. I'm Joanne Ward. I represent Woodbury's northwest part of Woodbury, South Maplewood, South Oakdale, and all of Landfall. I have a long history of military in my family. I think everybody back since they came to this country and had opportunity to be in the military has served, including my daughter-in-law, currently in the Coast Guard, active duty, working on the pandemic response program with the Coast Guard.
Committees that you serve?
I'm on the education and then this committee. I'm feeling like who was it that forgot the third one? Sorry, it's been a bad day.
That's the governor of Texas.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I was trying to remember. I forget his name. Oh, what's the third one?
Tell you what, when you think of it,
I'll let you know.
You bring
I'll
it
let
back
you know.
To me.
Like I said, it's been a bad day.
No, that's appreciate you being here. And if the members would pull out of their packet the yes.
I know you mean no.
I'm sorry.
I'm going to tell you, I was in the Air Force. Been a long time ago.
Mr. Purcell, represent Purcell.
I feel like I'm back in my Legion post here. We always got to fight to get our word.
Last but not least, represent Purcell.
More decades ago than I want to acknowledge. John Purcell, represent North Central Minnesota District 5A, Bemidji, Cass Lake, Leech Lake Indian Reservation. I'm on a couple other committees, and I'm trying to remember what mine are, too, but it'll come to me eventually. This is the most important one, so the rest of them, you know, we'll get it figured out. We've got yours, mine, and our family with 8 kids and 11 grandkids, and we got a new grandbaby last September, so everything's good, and showing them all how to spearfish in Pike Bay. And I'm a proud member of DAV Chapter 7, Bemidji.
Well, with that, you know, Representative Purcell, Representative Hancock, and myself, we're all Bemidji grads, okay, from Bemidji State University, so we might have some stories about each other, too. So, but if you would, members, if you would pull out of your packet the information on the committee rules, I've kept them short. Again, we'll want to meet promptly on time at 12:45. Again, these are rules that you have in most of your committees. I'm also on the Ways and Means Committee, and the set of rules there are much longer than what we got here, obviously. So just kind of read through it. I do not have the 24-hour rule. I think if we can work things out right within the committee. My goal is this committee should be the most nonpartisan committee in the legislature, in the House. And that's my goal, is that we do the right things for veterans, make sure we steer things in the right direction at where these different bills have to go, state government, finance, taxes, wherever they need to go, that we work together and make sure that we support each other and these bills that are going to do what's right for men and women serving and men and women who have served. 2 years ago, I was the guest speaker down at the Minneapolis Veterans Home on Veterans Day. And right before I got up to speak, in fact, Commissioner Shelato had to sit through my speech, which was kind of a neat deal. But somebody came up to me and said, you know, Representative Detmer, this is the first year that we that there are no World War I veterans alive in America, United States, or Canada. And that was 2 years ago. And we know that if you look at our five veterans' homes that we're, this committee deals with, many of the men and women that are in our veterans' homes now are World War II, Korean War, Vietnam War, and we look what might be that population 10 years from now. so we know what's out there. So whatever we can do in this committee to bring forward good pieces of legislation for our veterans, that's what we need to do. On the agenda today, we obviously don't have any bills to discuss and to work on today, but we do have our agencies here. And the first one up and for agency overviews is Department of Military Affairs Executive Director Don Kerr. And I think they're getting you hooked up there.
Yep. Yes, sir.
Yes.
Well, they're hooking them up, I have a question. Are there, and I haven't seen documentation on this, but is this a finance committee? Are there accounts associated with this committee? And if so, which ones?
Well, bills from here will go to state government finance. So we fall under the state government finance. Or they might be directed toward taxes. So
Mr. Chair, so we won't be considering any of the finance components of the bills that go through here. That'll be considered just in state government finance, Mr. Chair?
That's my understanding.
Okay.
That's my understanding. Thank but we'll discuss them. We'll be discussing them.
Understood. Thanks.
Thank you. Welcome, Mr. Kerr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, and welcome. Good afternoon, members. My name is Don Kerr. I'm the Executive Director of the Department of Military Affairs, and I'm here to give you a brief overview of our agency. It's going to focus mostly on the National Guard, which is the vast majority of our agency, and I'll talk a little bit about the other pieces of that toward the back end of my brief. So no further ado, this is the agenda that I intend to follow, and copies of these slides were presented or provided to the members earlier. They should be in your packets. I would also note that we have our annual report for calendar year 2014 that we're receiving day after tomorrow. So as soon as we get those in, we'll make sure that the members of the committee, along with the rest of the members of the legislature, receive those and have a little bit more updated information, but generally the same info that I'm providing you today.
Mr. Kerr, would you want us to hold off on questions until the end, or would you like to, if we see a question, would you like to
ask? Mr. Chair, I will defer to your judgment on that. I have no problem answering questions as we go,
okay,
if that's what the committee likes to do.
Yeah, we can do that. We can do that.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, first of all, the National Guard. We are reserve components of the Army and Air Force. That is fairly unique in the reserve components in that we have both a dual state and federal mission. That's ensconced in federal law that way. We are a state military force under the control of the governor in normal times. Unless mobilized by the National Command Authority, we take an oath both to the federal constitution and to the state constitution. And we say on our bullet here is one standard, two oaths, three missions. All of our training is conducted to the standard that's imposed by the active component of the Army and the Air Force. We take two oaths, one to the federal constitution and one to the state constitution. And three missions, a federal mission, a state mission, and a community mission that we feel very strongly about because we do think we add value to our communities, and that's a very important part of what we do. As of early December, 13,315 soldiers and airmen in the Minnesota National Guard. That number, of course, moves on a day-to-day basis. We are comprised of a joint force headquarters and the Department of Military Affairs at the state level. Then we have a bunch of Army units and air units that are organized underneath those. And I'll talk about that a little more later. The Adjutant General, when he was sworn in, identified six priorities that he wanted to use during his tenure to really organize us and focus us moving forward. And they kind of stand on their own, but I want to talk about them just a little bit. First of all, he intended us to continually strive to be as competent as possible so that we're ready for whatever mission may come to us, either federal or state. He wants us to make sure that we're cognizant of having the right force structure, and that is to fight for the right forces that are allocated at the national level so that we can accomplish the missions that we may receive either through the federal or the state side. He's looked at the long range to say, okay, and how do we make this work for the long term? How can we be sustainable over the long term as we talk about the facilities that we occupy? We need to make sure that we're taking care of our service members and their families, and that's really incorporated the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon program. But he also looked at our force and noticed that our force does not match the diverse nature of the population of our state. And he felt that was something that we needed to get ahead of, or at least try to catch up to, because it's important that we reflect the population that we serve. And that also is something that if we don't move on it early, it's very difficult to catch up. And that's one of the areas that we're making great progress in at the junior levels, but because of the nature of our force, we don't hire from the outside generally. We have to grow our own leadership. And that means the population that we start with is the population that we have to draw some from. And so as we look at the diversity of our force and figuring out how to make our senior leadership more diverse without violating any laws or doing anything improper, that's been a real challenge for us, and we're making headway in that area, but something that we're watching very closely. And the last priority was something that he identified early that he wanted to pursue, and that was regarding cybersecurity and response. He saw that as an emerging threat area.
Representative Lish, you have a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question relates to, is there a metric for the diversity of state National Guard forces nationwide in terms of how diverse they are? And if there is such a metric, where do we fall? I understand that Minnesota is a lot less diverse in general as a state, but where does our state National Guard fall?
Mr. Kerr?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lesh, actually there are a number of metrics that we look at. None of them were as precise as to get to the answer that you're looking for, and I think the Adjutant General articulating that we should reflect the population that we serve was important for us, and that's where it gets to a kind of an apples and oranges comparison. We do actually measure and report both by race, ethnicity, I guess it'd be more than both, and gender, how we are comprised, and actually have become much more diverse in Minnesota. I will have to get back to you on how we would fit into a ranking, again, because there is such a diversity of diversity across the force. But we feel that we actually have some pretty effective measures to show our progress toward reflecting the population of the state of Minnesota. So in Minnesota, we've established internal demographic objectives based on what the state demographer has for Minnesota, and we're striving to meet those across the racial and ethnic groups that have been identified.
Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Kurt, have you been able to determine, or have there been any conclusions drawn yet as to why we're falling short, or primary factors for the reasons why we're falling short?
Mr. Kerr?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lesh, anecdotally, we think there's a lot of data that shows that there is some, I'm trying to remember the right term for this, but some inherent advantages that are given to certain demographic groups through performance on the ASVAB, the Armed Services Vocational Aptitude Battery, through a propensity in some cultures to have more difficulty with the English language, particularly if it's a second language for them, and overcoming some of those objectives or some of those obstacles sometimes limits the ability of some cultures and some specific groups to participate. There have also been some cultural changes or cultural paradigms that we've had to overcome. For example, several of the cultures really require a lot more parental consent and, in fact, enthusiasm than perhaps the predominant culture in Minnesota does. I don't know if that answers your question or not, but we've been looking at a number of areas that we can reach out and try to overcome some of those things.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Ward.
He pretty well answered it. Thank you.
Okay. Continue, Mr. Kerr.
All right. Very good. So a little snapshot of the Air National Guard. About 2,245 airmen as of early December, 102% of their strength. In both the Army and the Air, we consistently drive above our requirements. And that actually has been very good for us, although there is a little bit of hidden danger in that moving forward. Then I'll talk about that a little bit later. Two major units, the 133rd Airlift Wing, stationed here in the Twin Cities, and the 148th Fighter Wing, stationed in Duluth. The Air Force is a little bit different than the Army in how they station their units. They cling to the large base idea, and the Army is distributed throughout the state of Minnesota, and I'll talk a little bit more about that. 11,070, about 116% of our strength. The major units that we have are Joint Force Headquarters that provides command and control and oversight here. We have a Combat Division Headquarters, the 34th Infantry Division. We have an Armored Brigade Combat Team, the 1st Brigade of the 34th Division. Combat Aviation Brigade, the 34th Aviation Brigade, currently deployed to Kuwait. A Regional Support Group, the Troop Command, and our Regional Training Institute. Those are all the colonel-level commands in the Army National Guard. We also have Camp Ripley, a real jewel in our inventory, 53,000-acre state-owned facility, centrally located in Minnesota. We do an awful lot of training there, as do a lot of other agencies and a lot of other military units, including the National Guard of other states and nations. For that matter, we have a lot of the Canadian Reserve Forces conduct training at Camp Ripley. As I stated a little bit earlier, the Army is distributed throughout the state. Currently, it's 63 training centers and 61 communities, our two air bases and our two Army training sites. Camp Ripley, as previously mentioned, and a training site at Arden Hills. Much smaller, but still very significant for us. We've added value to our community by providing those armories as spaces. Not as big a deal here in the metropolitan area, but out in rural Minnesota, having a large space to conduct an activity is sometimes difficult for a community to come up with. We keep our doors open 365, and those are available for lease to the public in almost all circumstances. And that's one of the ways that we add value to our community. We've conducted operations in 33 countries over the last 5 years. And those kind of stand for themselves. And we've also had our forces represented on all seven continents of the globe, including Antarctica. Our 133rd Airlift Wing, about once a year, flies a mission to Antarctica to carry supplies down to the science base there. Currently notified for upcoming deployments, just a little under 900 soldiers and airmen currently on notice for potential deployment. You probably have also heard that some of those are identified for deployment to West Africa in the coming months. That mission continues to evolve. We were originally notified 698 of our service members that they would be called for that. That number is now below 300, and we're watching that very closely as that mission continues to evolve in the fight against Ebola in Liberia. State active duty missions, I don't have the 2014 days on here, but we did an additional 848 state active duty man days this last year in 2014, most of those in support of Coochin County and the flooding that occurred on the Rainy River. But we also have winter storm activations. In fact, I already have one state active duty day this year. We opened the Armory in St. James with a state active duty resource last week and had actually seven citizens of Minnesota that sought shelter there. So we're kind of involved in a lot of things that go on day-to-day in Minnesota. We maintain 10 core essential capabilities, and this gets back to that force structure argument that I talked about as one of the Adjutant General's priorities. These are the capabilities that have been identified at the national level that are necessary for the governors to be able to conduct the operations that they should need in their state. Command and control, oversight, medical units, communications, logistics, transportation, engineer, civil support teams. I think I have a slide on the 55th Civil Support Team. They're kind of an interesting unit. They were brought into the force structure about 15 years ago, stood up throughout the country. Originally started with three teams, and now I believe we're at more than 50 teams across the country. Their purpose is to go out and identify potential threats for chemical, biological, nuclear, and radioactive hazards in something of a law enforcement and anti-terrorism role, identifying when those threats have occurred by providing laboratory and trained individuals who can go into a hot zone and sample agents and determine what they are in a relatively quick
Mr. Kerr, going back to say from 9/11 to current, the Guard, where do you think most of our Guard deployments and service spent, more in this within the state or outside the country?
Mr. Chair, just by the mandate count, definitely in Iraq, followed by Afghanistan, followed by the other combat theaters, and last in the state.
I mean, that's just to push the point that our Guard and Reserve components are, you know, many of them have been called up 3, 4, 5 different deployments. So it's a lot different role that they're playing today in the modern world. So continue. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I talked a little bit about the Civil Support Team. So the Civil Support Team is a small unit. It is full-time, actually. They're under Title 32, so under the control of the governor, but it's a joint unit between of Army and Air resources that are on duty all the time and available to assist local law enforcement in identifying hazards. We also have something called the Emergency Response Force. That is predominantly a traditional Guard force, so they are there to do more mitigation than detection. So the 55th Civil Support Team does detection, and the Emergency Response Force the combination of engineering units and medical units come in to do mitigation in the event of a bad day. We also have a small counter drug program. That's part of a federally funded program that does drug demand reduction and also does some assistance to law enforcement. We have a critical infrastructure protection assessment team here in Minnesota. I believe that's the last one in the nation, and they actually have nationwide coverage. But they will go out and do vulnerability assessments for public and some private key facilities around the nation to assist in planning force protection measures for those activities. And they have actually contributed to support here at the Capitol for this facility. And, of course, we do conduct community support in our communities. Our equipment capabilities, we just have some pictures of stuff. What does the Guard bring to the fight? Well, we bring lots of people. We bring lots of trucks. We bring a few things like pumps and generators and forklifts. Many of these things, though, are also available through other agencies or in other in the private sector. Though some of the specialty stuff clearly is not. Aviation capabilities, we currently have 5 Chinook helicopters in the state and 11 Blackhawks that are flying at any given time. 8 C-130H3 Hercules aircraft and 18 Fighting Falcons up at Duluth. The numbers on the rotary wing particularly, but the fixed wing aircraft as well, do change periodically. Obviously, our units are involved in the rotation to support ongoing global operations, and currently our Chinook unit and our AeroMedevac unit are notified for possible deployment upcoming. So we'll see those numbers change a little bit here in the next year or so, and then they'll bump back up. We also have some communications platforms that really are listed as dual-use equipment but are more relevant to the domestic operations that we conduct. And this is one of those things that's very obscure, but when you go into a region where cell phone coverage has been knocked out, it's very important. We've become very dependent on our cell phones for emergency communications. And to be able to go in and set up a node that can replicate a cellular structure to give law enforcement and the local community the opportunities to talk to each other on an emergency basis is kind of important. So these are some of those capabilities that are difficult to describe exactly what they do, but are very important when you get out into the communities, particularly in greater Minnesota. So our Yellow Ribbon program is really kind of nation-leading. We do 3 events to reintegrate service members when they return from deployment, a 30-day event that focuses on getting them identified or connected with potential services that they may need, and really gets their families involved in assisting in their reintegration as well. At the 60-day event, we change the focus a little bit and do more of a check of our service members to make sure that their readjustment is occurring in the way that we would like it to. And that, again, we involve the families in that process because it's very easy for a service member who's come back from a deployment to come back and put his okay face on for his 1 day a month or 2 drills. But when the family's living with them, it's a whole different story. And they can sometimes provide some insight to say, no, you're maybe not as good as we thought you were, and you need to talk to these people here. So we keep the families involved, particularly through those 30 and 60-day events. The 90-day event, we do a final health reassessment and really take care of the administrative aspects of making sure that all the equipment they're supposed to have turned in got turned in. And after that 90-day event, they're cleared to be reassigned to another unit for promotion opportunities and other events should that occur. We have tried to do one-year events, but have been we've really been unsuccessful with that because what often happens is as we lock service members into their units for a deployment cycle, if we don't free them up to follow promotion opportunities and reassignments for other reasons, it's really hard to get back to them that 1 year after. So by the time they get to the 1 year after their deployment, they've really kind of been locked into a position for 3 years. And we do have a lot of mobility in our system for promotion opportunities, and that's kind of a big deal. So we've not been very successful in our one-year events. However, we have been doing a good job with family prep academies because when a unit is notified for deployment, the families get very interested in participating, and participation in those preparatory academies is very good, as is initial soldier preparation.
Mr. Kirk, Yellow Ribbon Network, there's the counties and the cities and the companies. I live in Washington County, and Washington County is very, very, very active in the Yellow Ribbon Network. How might a legislator encourage their county to to get in touch with the Yellow Ribbon Network and go through a process. What's that process?
Mr. Chair, it's actually very easy, and we do try to push everyone back to. We consider our Yellow Ribbon Network to be very much grassroots events or organizations, and are very proud of that, and think that's the only way it can really work. So we encourage them to go back to their communities and look at the local government entities and the volunteer entities in their communities. And there's probably a Yellow Ribbon organization in your community, either at the local level or at the county level. We currently have 211 cities, 24 counties, and 39 companies identified. So our total numbers right now, we have 274 Yellow Ribbon entities out there. And the best way to do that is to go back to your locals. However, if that doesn't work for you, you can go out to www.beyondtheyellowribbon.org, and we can get you pointed in the right direction to show you which entities are out there and operating. And beyond that, give you some resources to contact if that doesn't work as well, and get you hooked up with a family assistance center that can get you pointed to the right contacts in your communities.
Thank you.
And that pretty much briefed that slide for me, Mr. Chair, so I'll move on to the next one. Another way that we think that we contribute to our communities, it's really a very mutual beneficial relationship for us, in that the legislature has been very generous with our state tuition reimbursement program. When we combine that with federal tuition benefits that have been dramatically increased over the last 10 years through the GI Bill and the Federal Tuition Assistance Program, we really provide a pretty clean path for a citizen of Minnesota who's interested in becoming an educated Minnesotan to do so at very low cost to themselves. So those first two are really important to us. I would comment at this point that the federal tuition benefits have really been on the increase. But over the last 18 months, we've really seen a movement in the other direction. As the budget gets tighter at the federal level, they're putting a lot of constraints on the use of the Federal Tuition Assistance Program. That actually has had a seesaw effect on us. So because those additional federal benefits have been available, we've actually been under-executing our state tuition reimbursement program, and that will be the subject for another briefing when it comes time to talk the budget for you. But now we're seeing those federal tuition benefits starting to get harder to come by, and that will probably result in an increased use of the state benefit moving forward. There are a lot of factors that are weighing in on that, and we've done quite a bit of analysis, and I'll save that for that next briefing, but you will see us make a change to our budget request moving forward in how we're funding that. And first of all, it won't be an increase, by the way. I'll head you up right there right now. Once the governor makes the budget request public, we'll come back and talk to you about that.
Okay, Representative Ward. Yes, Representative Ward. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This may not be the time to pursue this, but I would like to know a little bit more about the education reimbursement process, mm-hmm. and how much counseling and guidance soldiers are given and to make wise choices about how they use that. And there's also been some talk about changing the state involvement in that. So maybe we talk about that some more later, but I'd be interested in knowing more about how that's going to work.
Mr. Kerr, maybe we could cover that at another time. I just got a note here. We got 30 minutes left, so we also have Veterans Affairs, the department, to come forward. Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will, Representative Ward, I will cover that at our next briefing and give you some more detail on that, maybe offline as well. That's something that would be...
Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to highlight this. I realize we're short on time, Mr. Chair, but this, I think, is an incredibly important subject for soldiers, the tuition reimbursement. I know my battalion just received a memorandum in our last newsletter regarding this, too, about upcoming changes. And it is a source of great distress for the soldiers who are your constituents, who are no longer going to receive the benefits that they signed up for. I myself have been subject to this, not for tuition reimbursement, for student loan repayment program, which allowed me to afford to downgrade and join the Guard in the first place. And it's pretty outrageous at the way our soldiers are being treated in this process. Not all of it's state, much of it is federal.
Yeah.
Please, even though this is not the finance component of this committee, of the State Government Finance Committee, please keep a close eye on this, whatever that budget request may be in the upcoming session here.
Thank you. Mr. Kerr?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Blush. I'll move forward. We also are involved internationally, not only in our deployments, but also through partnerships, longstanding partnerships with both Norway and Croatia. This gets into the root of the briefing about our agency, so this is the statutory basis for the Department of Military Affairs. We basically are the state agency that oversees the operations of the National Guard and administers it. This is the structure. The Adjutant General serves as the principal staff officer, the governor is the commander of the National Guard. We have Army National Guard units, Air National Guard units depicted in the flanks. We have an Army National Guard staff, an Air National Guard staff, joint staff, and that sounds like there's a lot of redundancy there, but there really isn't. They all deal with different things that's laid out in federal code. And then the stuff in gray is where we get down to the state agency piece of this thing. And those are the types of things that we conduct, and I'll leave that for your review at some future date. This is who we serve. The annual state budget for our agency is $19.3 million in the last 2 years. We expect that to remain relatively constant moving forward. But in addition to that, we have $40 million of federal funding that passes through our agency and an additional direct federal funding of about $400 million. Those numbers are actually up just a little bit in 14, which surprised us when we ran the numbers. We thought that they would start to be going down in the semi-post-war era that we were told that we're moving into. But last year, it was actually slightly higher. About 325 state employees, only 30 of those are actually 100% state-funded employees. The rest are cost-shared with the federal government, usually at the 75% rate. That master cooperative agreement is basically a service agreement between the Adjutant General and the Chief of the National Guard Bureau. It allows us to provide services using state employees and then get reimbursed for them federally. So that's money that doesn't pass through our budget, but it does go through the state's general fund. We have four state budget programs, and I'll go really quickly through these. We have an appropriation to maintain our training facilities. The largest appropriation is our enlistment incentives program, a relatively small appropriation, the general support appropriation that we use to fund our agency operations. And the last one, emergency services, is really a placeholder amount. That's an average of the last 8 years state active duty requirement with a high and low thrown out. And that money just goes into the budget to give us immediate operating capital in the event of a state active duty. And if that funding isn't used, it is canceled at the end of the year. Little picture just to give you an idea of our poor three little state employees there. Each of these represents 100 with a whole bunch of active soldiers and airmen, and then a whole bunch more traditional guardsmen. I've talked economic impact already. About 2,070 full-time employees of the agency, most of those federal, the rest state. We are the largest employer in Morrison County, the ninth largest employer in the Duluth region. The good news there is that we used to be the fourth largest employer, and now Duluth's economy has rebounded to the point that we're no longer their fourth largest employer. That's good. One more kind of unnecessary slide to show you what some of that looks like, and I'm going to blow by that one too. And Mr. Chair, with that, I will attempt to yield the floor to any after any questions to my brethren from the Department
of Lash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll keep this short because I know we only have a little time left for Veterans Affairs. But Mr. Kerr, on slide 21 for the statutory basis, when's the last time there was any component of the Department of Military Affairs that was not solely Minnesota National Guard or under the National Guard Bureau? Can you recall?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lesh, I know it's been many, many decades. The last time it would be there used to be a naval militia in Minnesota, and there was statutory language that authorized that. The naval militia language was actually pulled out of statute, I think, about 25 years ago, and it had been a number of years before that. So I can do some research, Representative Lesh, and get back to you, but it would have been a long time. There is statutory authority to establish a home guard. We do not currently have a home guard established, but the language is there. The authority is there for the governor to do so.
Thank you, Mr. Kerr. I did bring up to the governor one time that he actually had independent authority to raise a home guard, and his eyebrows went up. But yes, it would be expensive and probably unnecessary. Second question, how have you been doing with your retention, specifically women and minorities? Retention per se, and second, I know that Minnesota has had the highest
rate of soldier suicides in the nation, of any National Guard in the nation. How has that been progressing? How have we been dealing with that? And second, our rate of sexual assaults. Now, these may be too long to address at this setting, Mr. Chair, but I think these are some of the most important things that we can address.
I think those are some questions that not only military affairs but veterans affairs can address when they come back to the committee.
Sure. So yep, thank you.
Have something prepared for us when you come back.
Absolutely, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Kerr. Representative Norton.
Mr. Kerr, two quick questions. On the 133rd Airlift Wing, there was some talk of them being moved out of Minnesota. Is that still in discussion, or are they permanent?
Mr. Chair, Representative Newman, of course, nothing is permanent, but right now the 133rd is not on any list to be moved. You may be thinking of the 934th Airlift Wing, also a C-130H3 equipped unit. They're in the Air Force Reserve. And I'm not 100% sure what their status is right now. I know that they were originally identified to be taken from the force structure and remissioned into something else. But I know that that was at least delayed and may have been completely off track. But I'll follow up with that and get back to you and to the committee on that, Mr. Chair.
And briefly, on their civil support teams, how much do they overlap with Homeland Security?
Mr. Chair and Representative Newton, they really don't overlap with Homeland Security. There is some capability overlap with some local law enforcement capability that has been added, particularly here in Minnesota in the last 10 years. But they really have a different mission from what those folks do, and they have a responsibility for regional coverage that those local entities don't have. I don't know if that really answered your question or not. Yeah.
Anything else, Representative Newton?
Yes.
Is that it? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Kerr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Next agency, Department of Veterans Affairs. And you should have a PowerPoint presentation in your packet. I believe we got Mr. McAlney, Legislative Director, Brad Lindsay, Acting Deputy Commissioner, and John Powers, Finance Director. Just a reminder to the committee members, make sure you go through the chair when asking questions. I know we're used to the MAG meeting, but just go through the chair. While we're waiting here, there's a message here to announce the House is using a new computer program for scheduling and announcing committee hearings on the website. And people may have noticed a few small problems. The IT is working it out to resolve the problems swiftly. So if you've noticed that, I just needed to announce that. Well, welcome to committee. Please introduce yourself and welcome for the record here.
Well, good afternoon, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Mike McKelleny. I'm the Legislative Director for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and I'll just introduce my colleagues briefly. Brad Lindsay, the Acting Deputy for the Programs and Services side of the House, and John Powers, our Financial Director. And the way we're going to do this, Mr. Chair, is just kind of run through. I'll highlight a few things initially and close up a little bit, and then the Acting Deputy will kind of talk you through programs and services, the slides that we've prepared. We will have a short pause about midway through because I'm going to transfer over to our website so that I can display some pictures and some live action on our website as to where all these services and programs are located, and we'll come back and kind of tell you where we're at currently with our finance spending to date. So as we move through the agenda, we're just going to again talk about programs and services and give you a quick financial overview. Again, I would echo what Don Kerr said, not getting into the budget. Governor hasn't released that yet, so we're still it's still to be determined. But what we do is we're dedicated to serving Minnesota's 370,000 plus veterans and their families, and we do this through fulfilling the needs of Minnesota veterans and their families by providing proven and innovative programs and services to maximize their quality of life, and I think you're very familiar with many of those. A little change from the previous year. We've kind of reorganized within the department just a bit. We now have three major operational function areas within programs and services, and underneath that there's a variety of actual services and activities that go on. We're able to do this and perform so well with the strong partnerships we have with the USVA, the Veteran Service Organizations, the CVSOs, and of course our 501c type partnerships. Again, just to kind of highlight who we serve, 370,000 veterans within Minnesota, and that's, I won't get into the details, but that's the best low estimate, and I can further explain that if necessary. But it's about approximately 7% of the state's population. We serve veterans in all 87 counties. And just a side note, to date, right around 66,000 veterans with an address or from Minnesota have served since 9/11 in one of the many theaters. And the average age has been approximately 35 years old. So if you look at the charts, you can see numbers attached to the various veteran eras, and you can see the Vietnam era veterans are our highest population currently, followed by other service periods, which is all the veterans that were developed or made between those war eras. We're about 8% women veterans and 92% male veterans. At this point, I'm going to turn it over to Brad Lindsay, the Acting Commissioner on Programs and Services, and let him take you through the rest of the slides.
Thank you, Mike. Mr. Chair, committee members,
welcome.
Thanks for having us here today. You bet. This is just our a higher-level organizational chart of the department. As you can see, we're currently without a deputy commissioner on either side. We have acting deputy commissioners on both. I'm normally the senior director of the programs and services side of the house. As Mike said before, there are basically three functional areas. They don't necessarily line up with the budget activities, which John will go through, but operationally. But I always say there's two main focuses of the department. The one is advocacy, ensuring that the veterans in the state get all the benefits and services they're entitled to through the federal Department of Veterans Affairs and other sources. And then the other part where we come in and fill the gaps in the services of the federal VA. So we try to make programs where they're a little, you know, good example, mental health. With post 9/11, OIF, OEF ramping up their mental health services, were a little lacking. So we try to come up with programs, at least for the interim, to help fill those gaps. Our veteran services division entails mostly our claims and field operations staff, who represent veterans and their family members by acting as their advocates before the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. The division consists of our St. Paul and Fargo VA claims offices. Those are co-located with the VA regional offices in both those locations. That also entails a little bit of reorganization from last year. Our Gold Star Families and Women's Program, our Tribal Veteran Service Officers, and our Veterans Outreach Division. Currently, about 90% of veterans in the state utilize an accredited representative or a power of attorney on their claim, and about 50% of those are represented by the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs and the American Legion. We handle the American Legion's claims within Minnesota. We have a long-standing partnership to provide those services. Our next division is our Veterans Employment and Education Division. The CIS veterans and eligible family members navigate the complicated higher educational benefit system and promotes employment and self-sufficiency for those individuals. Our higher education veterans programs, we have campus representatives who are veterans who are located all across the state in 13 different main campuses, but they also have sub-campuses, most of the MNSCU facilities. They provide service hours there, the University of Minnesota system, they provide hours there, and even a lot of the private schools. As Representative Ward was asking earlier about someone to help guide someone, that's what those folks do. They're well versed in all the military tuition benefits as well as our veterans benefits on the state and federal levels. Right now in Minnesota there are 15,705 students, veterans, who are utilizing their federal GI Bill benefits. We also have the Minnesota GI Bill with just section handles. And for fiscal year 14, we've had 1,103 individuals that have been assisted through that. That's a last dollar in program, so if an individual has any federal benefits, those come first. Any remaining costs, they can go to the Minnesota GI Bill for assistance. It's also very significant for those who have reached what the VA calls their delimiting date. They no longer have federal benefits. We can help them up to age 62. So in some cases, that's the only benefit they have, and that's up to $10,000 lifetime. So that section also contains the State Approving Agency, which is a completely federal-funded program. The State Approving Agency, or the federal VA, does not go out and certify schools for its own educational programs. They contract with the states to do that, and that's what our SAA division does. Last but not least, our veterans program entails our oldest program, which is the State Veterans Benefits Division, the State Soldiers Assistance Program. We provide unique services to veterans which supplement certain federal programs. We manage, like I said, the State Soldiers Assistance Program, the Link Vet Program, which is our it's an online phone assistance, chats, pretty much anything you ever want to know about veterans benefits. If you go to our LinkVet website or call the LinkVet number, those staff can assist you, and they're available after hours and on weekends as well. Our Minnesota Service Corps, which is a partnership we have with Lutheran Social Services, that's to fill one of those gaps that was identified several years ago by the legislature for mental health care. We do a RFP process. Lutheran Social Services provides counseling on mental health counseling. They also provide financial counseling to families and veterans in need. The Minnesota Operation for Veterans Empowerment, what we call our MOVE program, is kind of a small program, but has been really successful. We maintain 4 beds at the Union Gospel Mission here in St. Paul. For homeless veterans, and if they agree to case management, we assign an outreach worker to them and provide a place for them to stay while they're going through the system, getting into school or getting a disability claim through, things like that. Veterans Preference is also, we have a Veterans Preference officer who is new this year. His name is Dennis Devereaux. He assists those veterans who make a claim to the department for relief under the Veterans Preference Act. And then lastly, our state veteran cemeteries. Right now, Little Falls is the only existing state veteran cemetery. Does about 418 burials per year. We have 5,147 veterans and family members interred there. We also, as most of you know, are under construction with a new cemetery in southeast Minnesota, located just south of Preston, Minnesota. And it's been a little delayed with the cold weather on our construction, but we're looking to have that open hopefully early this summer and start taking interments there. And that is all I have as far as that, Mr. Chair. If you have any questions, we're also going to throw up our map here to just give you an idea of what areas and where we are and what we cover within the state.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions? Yes, Representative Scoop.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I could please make a request to have this document sent to us in a size font that I could read. I'm struggling, but it would be great.
Representative, that's no problem.
Thank you.
We'll get that to your staff.
Thank you, Representative Pugh. Again, yeah, we can probably all use that.
I understand. I blew my
myself
own
too. Any other questions?
Do you want to proceed with that?
While we're waiting here, Also on the table back there, and also in your packets, I included Commander's Task Force, their legislative agenda, and also the UVLC and the MAG legislative agenda priorities. I think these organizations, they do a lot to promote veterans' military issues, and I know the MAG, we meet periodically. Our next meeting is the 26th of January at 9 o'clock in 300 North. And in, just to speaking to the MAG, which I co-chair that, we don't vote on anything, but we discuss veterans' issues, and almost all the veterans' organizations, along with DEED and Minsky, or they just come in and talk about veterans' issues. And I think it's a good place to come and just be heard, and a lot of pieces of legislation does come out of these organizations, whether the Commander's Task Force or the UVLC or the MAG, and they represent the veterans of our state. So just a side note. Please proceed.
And Mr. Chair, what we have here is just some data analytics off of our MDVA website, and I would encourage all the members to go and check it out. We have the state broken down into the House districts, and what I wanted to do is just kind of briefly show you where on the map things are located that Mr. Lindsay had talked about. So he referred to some of our claims offices and what they do. We talked about the new Veterans Cemetery in the south, but also in Little Falls. And those are located on the map. I don't know if you can see those very well from where you're sitting, but this is all interactive, so if you need to go in and get some further information, you can just click on those pins or highlight whatever it is you're trying to find. We talked about the fact that we work with some of our VA counterparts as well as other service organizations and 501c3s, so we've got some family assistance centers shown in blue. I'll remove those. The County Veteran Service Officers, which we talked about, are located throughout the state in all 87 counties, and again, interactive. You can just kind of click on that and find who you're trying to find. Or, I'm sorry, I clicked the wrong deal there. So that's where they're located. Higher Education Veterans Program, which we talked about, let me just remove the red, not to confuse, are located, again, throughout the state at some of the primary campuses. Different regions are shown as displayed. Of course, the central office for the VA located in Duluth, as well as in the outreach, and as well as in the WIP building downtown. So there's a lot of information on this map. I won't go into everything. We talked about our tribal veteran service officers and where they're located around the state. You can kind of see that. So I just wanted to kind of bring this up to help illuminate where some of those programs and services are and where we stretch across the state. So now I will return to the slideshow. And at this point, Mr. Chair, we're going to move on to just a brief financial overview, and that'll be given by, again, John Powers.
Welcome, Don.
Powers. Mr. Chairman, committee members, John Powers, Finance Director for Veterans Affairs. I've been with the agency now just a little over a year, and it's a rather big budget, but get my arms around it. So programs and services is one of the programs. Our other is the veterans' health care, but we're going over programs and services today. And for the 14-15 budget, it was $46.2 million for the biennium. That included all funds. 32.2 of it came from the general fund. 10.1 of it were federal funds that we received for construction for the Southeastern Minnesota Cemetery. And then we received an additional $1.2 million in federal funds for the Little Falls Cemetery construction, which was the Calvarium there. $0.8 million in federal funds was received for the state approving agency, which Brad has talked about. And then there's an additional $1.9 million of special revenue funds that comes from the SOT plates and the burial fees. And for FY14, the FTEs were 80 for this program. The next slide shows the breakdown of those expenditures. So the special revenue fund made up of 4.2%, which again was made up of the maintenance fees from the cemetery and the SOT funds that we received. 69.6% is from the general fund, and 26.2% are federal funds that we received for the Little Falls and the Preston and SAA. In the middle of that slide there, programs and services makes up about 18% of our total budget for Veterans Affairs. And 82% goes to the health care. Just a quick note down below there, the general funds, if we just included general funds, about 87% goes to health care, and only 13% goes to programs and services. On the expenditure category, you can see we spent about 27% of our funds on payroll, 14.8% on other operating expenses, 33.1% on grants, aids, and subsidies, which is basically the MACV, the CORE, funds we transfer to the Veteran Service Organizations, and the State Soldiers Assistance Program, which is a good part of it. On the next slide here, our department total, as you can see, is $258 million for the biennium. And the general fund, as you can see up there, the $32 million, that is only for programs and services. We have statutory authority to transfer $94 million of that over into the healthcare side, and that'll show up in the minute. Miscellaneous special revenue fund there. As you go down the list there, special revenue, there's $2.3 million. The miscellaneous special revenue, there's $191 million of that. Again, $94 million of that is general fund money. And the other amounts are revenues that we collect from VA per diem and resident maintenance charges. If you go to the far right there, you see that the general fund for programs and services is about 12.5% of our overall budget for the agency. Special revenue is the $1.9 million makes up about 4.2%. Then we receive some gifts and donations through the cemeteries, and every now and then we'll get one through the regular agencies. Which was $35,000 during 14-15. And then again, there's the federal for the $12 million that we received for the work that we did in the cemeteries. Any questions? And then this last slide shows the actual budget activities for veteran services. That's made up of administration, the leadership, planning, human resources, communication, finance, legislative affairs, affirmative actions, IT initiatives, and the World War II Memorial, which we receive about $20,000 a year on that we get. That is about 9.9% of the actual program budget. The other budget activities, programs and services, which is made up of the State Soldiers Assistance Program, CORE, Linked Vet, the state cemeteries, state approving agencies, the Minnesota GI Bill. That's just for the administration of those for that program. And then the Minnesota System Council for Veterans, and also the Gold Star Program. And that makes up 11.2% of the overall budget, 62.5% of the program budget. And then the budget activity claims and outreach is the claims office, veterans outreach, travel, veterans services office, higher ed, county veterans service office grants, the Veteran Services Organizational Grant and support our troops. And that makes up about 4.6% of our overall budget and 25.7% for the programs and services. And then, again, we also manage the Minnesota GI Bill, which is actually an open appropriation that we receive. There's $6 million a year that is appropriated for that. For the 14-15, we've only used $880,000 of that. As you note in the footnote there, it doesn't include $3.2 million, which is actually transferred to the Office of Higher Education for them to administer those funds out. So the overall percentage of veterans programs and services for the agency is 17.9% of the overall budget, and again, we have 80 FTEs. Any questions?
What's the what is the reason for the Minnesota GI Bill? You say there's only a small amount of that have been used. Is it the word's not getting out there, or what's going on there?
Mr. Chair, it's been originally when the Minnesota GI Bill was put in place, it was only for post 9/11 veterans, mm-hmm. and I believe it was last year we expanded that to all veterans up to the age of 62. So that's been part of it, getting the word out to let all veterans know that they do have some benefit available, and we've made attempts with that in different ways, billboard campaigns and things like that through the state. So it's been ramping up, and we're hoping, you know, we're doing some more pieces. We're hoping we can get it up to that full, you know, $6 million appropriation if it's needed. So,
yeah, Mr. Lindsay, is it it's still first be last money going out, because the Montgomery GI Bill kicks in first, then the Minnesota GI Bill?
That's correct, okay. Mr. Chair, right. And that's always been something that keeps it down as well.
Right.
I think once people, you know, most of the delimiting dates for the federal benefits are either 10 or 15 years, 15 years for the new post 9/11 GI Bill. And I think as we see that expire and those benefits get exhausted, then we're going to see an increase with the Minnesota GI Bill at that point as well.
Okay. Are there any questions? We're going a few minutes over time here, but I think we're wrapping things up. Any other comments from the agency?
I can hustle through, Mr. Chair. This is just a slide to show you what the business is, okay, of the overall veteran enterprise in the state, combined all those players that I talked about initially. The Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the federal VA, our partners in the endeavor of making life better and providing benefits for veterans that they've earned, brings back about $2.36 billion a year, and you can see how that's fluctuated over the last couple of years. So it's in fact increasing. This is just a sort of a breakout, which you can also see on our website, where those dollars come back and what sector that those kind of go to, or for what purpose those federal dollars come back, and we're a large part in enabling this to happen. And then just in closing again, as we just talked about, we have a role within the state, but we're a valuable partner, as all our partners are, relative to veterans benefits. And a lot of money's coming back to the state for that. We're continuously developing post-war agency. One of the things the commissioner says a lot is we don't know what we don't know. So we have to evolve as the needs show themselves, and so we're always doing that. We're starting our 14th year of war and conflict, as you know, so we've got a big mission ahead of us. I threw what you don't have on your handouts, probably. I just threw a few news articles up to talk about the downsizing in the Army and the Air Force and things that we've all been watching for quite some time. And again, you know, the commissioner I know has talked for a couple of years about the tidal wave of veterans coming back. Well, that's veterans coming off of active duty, which we really didn't even, I think, count into that, the downsizing that the military is going to face. So we've got that issue to deal with as well. Again, you're well aware, Mr. Chair, a lot of the veterans nowadays look like myself and you, and we're going to be here for a long time. One final note I'd leave you with is, and I know the state's really taking a good hard look at our aging veterans. Just some quick stats there of where those aging veterans are relative to age, and the fact that we need to continue to not only take care of the veterans that are coming back and our young veterans and make sure they get educated, but we're watching them on the far end as well as they age to make sure we have everything in place to take care of their needs as well. So beyond that, any questions you would have, Mr. Chair, that concludes our briefing. Yeah.
Just one last one. You know, we've phase three of Minneapolis Veterans Home. I know we've come together as a state, and I think we put somewhere around $19 million for that. Has the federal VA come forward with the money? They've loosened their purses for that project.
Mr. Chair, where I would leave it is phase three is state-funded, and it's fully federally funded. There's a couple of documents that still have to ship. That's just part of the process, but phase three is fully funded.
Okay. Do we know when it's going to be completed?
No, we don't. Phase two is still going up as we speak. We've been over on the campus. Okay. They have to complete phase three, move residents in, and then they'll begin complete phase two, and then they'll begin phase three. So a couple more years yet.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you. I'm sure you'll be coming back to the committee. So.
Yes, sir.
Well, with that, I think, members, you do have another little piece of paper in your packet. And I came across this the other day, and we have a World War II veteran in our American Legion. And he sings this at a lot of our veterans' events. And I think you know, in 1938, Erwin Berlin composed this. Let me just read it real quick. You might not know this phase of it, but while the storms cloud gather across the sea, let us swear allegiance to a land that is free. Let us all be grateful for a land so fair as we praise our voices in a solemn prayer. God bless America, the land that I love. Stand beside her and guide her through the night and light from above. From the mountains to the prairies, to the oceans white with foam, God bless America, my home sweet home. God bless America, my home sweet home. And our next meeting is going to be on the 26th. On the 26th. I won't be singing it. I should bring in L. Ewert, the World War II veteran. He's got a deep bass voice. He just does an outstanding job singing this. So this meeting is now adjourned.